I present the prophet of the Almighty Baller.
Almighty Ballin fans, thanks for listening to Almighty Ballin, the Almighty Podcast, on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. If you haven't already subscribed to the Almighty Baller Podcast Network feed, which will feature all of our upcoming affiliate podcasts, including the already great Fast Break with Blake Rogers, then you should definitely do that. Give us a 5-star rating so it gets out there for the listening public, and that would be greatly appreciated. But today I'm recording this solo podcast because I recorded a couple of podcasts over the course of the last few days about the finals with some of our writers and our podcasters over at almightyballer.com, and for whatever reason, wasn't great audio quality, there's problems, internet connection issues. But I feel like I just have too much to say about this upcoming finals game to let the opportunity pass. So, of course, tonight, Game 7 of the finals is happening. Much to the Cavaliers' delight and to the Warriors' not delight. And my prevailing thought is one that was also expressed by ESPN's Kevin Arnovitz on the Low Post podcast. The idea is that with all the statistics and analysis and projections and basketball nitty-gritty and breakdowns and everything that goes into trying to figure out what we can expect going into an NBA game between two known quantities, the Warriors and the Cavaliers, I wouldn't say that all of that is out the window, but so much of it is out the window because of what he called small sample size theater. But even more so, it's not so much that it's indeterminable. It's just indeterminable in regards to all of these quotients and numbers. And I have this prophet motif. You know, I make predictions and I say, okay, you know, this is my hot take. I try to make predictions or prophecies about players and about outcomes to games or series based on, you know, thought. But this series, now that it's in Game 7, and especially given the trajectory of it, it's just not about that anymore. What Kevin Arnovitz said that really stuck with me was he expressed the irony that when the stakes are the highest, when there's one game that decides it all, and really this is one game that will decide very much so the narrative fates of these two teams, it's also at the point at which the outcome is most random. And yes, they're both great. Steve Kerr has talked about that. And yes, you know, LeBron is one of the greatest to ever play the games, and I've already decided that, but maybe you at home, you haven't decided that. Maybe you at home, you're a little doubtful about the Cavaliers or the Warriors. And the fact that we, going into this game, are going to come out of it once we know who is the winner and who is the loser with these radically different understandings of these teams and their talents and who they are in the greater NBA landscape is fascinating in so many ways. But it's true what Arnovitz expressed. When the stakes are the highest, when there's one game to decide it all, that's when the numbers and the analytics and the X's and O's just don't really cut it. Because, you know, let's say in the first quarter, Harrison Barnes misses two wide open threes, and LeBron James takes the rebound, brings it to the other side of the court, and slams it all over Steph Curry, right? Well, first of all, that opportunity wouldn't have been there if, you know, Harrison Barnes had made that three. And maybe it was good defense, maybe he just missed it. But in this situation, it's a wide open three, and he just missed it because he missed it. sure, some of shot hitting, a lot of shot hitting, is being clutch or not clutch. And you can't just say, oh, well, you know, bad luck if, you know, Nene shoots a three-pointer and he misses it. But, you know, on the other hand, Buddy Hield just hit 85 out of 100 threes in a pre-draft workout. And Jamal Murray hit 79 out of 100. So these guys can hit their threes when they're wide open. But, you know, if we just happen to live in a universe where Harrison Barnes misses those for whatever reason, then it could, you know, lead to a quick run. And I think why Steve Kerr, in his post-game interview, he was fined $25,000 for just saying, like, this is the MVP of the league, like, this is sort of bullshit, like, why was he called for these quote-unquote ticky-tack fouls, I believe, is the terminology he used. The reason why he felt like he needed to express that, you know, and lose $25,000, which is, like, as much as a car, right? He, like, basically gave up a car. The reason why he felt like he needed to express that is because at this point, every little thing matters, and the course of the game can really be determined by questions like, say, looking back at the Draymond Green suspension. I think that there's actually an understanding across the league that if, say, the Warriors had been down in that series heading into Game 5, say that the Cavaliers were up by 3, they were 3-1. Does anyone really think that the NBA would have suspended Draymond Green? Probably not. Because the NBA has a vested interest in keeping the series going. In fact, Green kicked Steven Adams in the Oklahoma City series, and he wasn't suspended. And it was a much more, I guess, egregious nut shot, I guess. It certainly looked worse. And you can say, like, oh, sure, you know, it was the last straw. But, you know, if that's how you're going to be officiating, how do you decide where that last straw is? Like, you get a warning? Like, that's not written into the rule book. And the bottom line is the referees can interpret the game in such a way that they, you know, basically decided the outcome of Game 5, which you could argue decided the outcome of Game 6, which you might argue will now determine the outcome of Game 7. And I don't know, honestly. I thought that the Warriors would have had this all locked up by now, but at the very least I can say that going into this Game 7, I know that since then there has been non-emotional, non-psychological things like Andrew Bogut's knee. He's out. That has nothing to do with how, like, clutch or not the team is. That being said, you want out of your NBA champion, if we're going to remember this as one of the greatest teams ever, then they need to pull through and win Game 7 regardless of this other stuff. They needed to be able to pull out. If they lose tonight, if the Warriors lose tonight, then they will have lost 3 out of the last 3 games, right? And basically just suffered this collapse. And this isn't a situation like that Steph Curry just broke his neck. It really sucks that Iggy's having these back spasms. And it sucks in, like, a lot of really problematic ways. But if this is the best team ever, then they need to pull it out. If this is a 73-win quality team, then they need to be able to win 1 out of 3 games. And that's sort of the bottom line. And it's just hard for me to find where the limits lie, where X's and O's, basketball strategy, and then the emotional, like, what is a winner? Where the boundary between the two of these things are. But without being able to quantify what that is, I can tell you that me personally, I know that Bogut's out, I know that Iggy's having back spasms, and I know that Draymond Green probably shouldn't have been suspended in Game 5. But I also know that I expect the Warriors to pull through, and that in Game 5, the Warriors were the favorites, and in Game 6, they were the favorites. And going into tonight, the Warriors are the favorites. And if they don't win any of those games, they fell apart, they don't deserve it, and LeBron James wins one for the land. And, you know, that sort of brings me into this next topic that I feel like is worth addressing. In the same way that I don't want to let the gravity of having just witnessed a 73-win season slip away, and, you know, I'm going for the Warriors tonight, not because I'm a Warriors fan, but just because I want to be able to say that I witnessed greatness, and, you know, if they collapse in the finals, it's not the same. And it's hard to argue that it would be. But that being said, I also have expressed to people who have talked to about it in the past, if I had to choose, if I was told that either LeBron's winning tonight and winning a championship for Cleveland, or it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen next year, it doesn't happen the year after, and LeBron James never wins another championship, then I would rather have LeBron take it tonight than the Warriors take it tonight. Because, frankly, I and most people who are heavily emotionally and psychologically, and, I mean, for me, thought invested into NBA basketball, I think that most of us have a deeper emotional connection having watched LeBron James do what he's done over the course of his career and watching the greatness on court of what he's been to Cleveland, what he was later to Miami, and what he is to the rest of the NBA, and what he is to Nike, which is about $1 billion, apparently. And after having watched all of this, like, I want that greatness to be validated. So tonight, there really is this coming together of two very different but very significant narratives in a story type way, but also in a philosophical way. And, you know, that sounds kind of funny for me, just based on my personal academic philosophical background, which I'm sure if you're a longtime listener, you can tell that I am educated at university. You know, and I mean, this is just basketball, but, you know, we as humans decide what we deem significant in our lives, whether that's people, things. It's arbitrary to some extent, but, you know, you love your mother, that's specific, and, you know, to some random other person, she's not your mother and she isn't significant. But we as a society have decided that this NBA championship is significant. And what LeBron James has achieved over the course of his career, I've decided that that's significant. I think most people beyond me also have decided that that's significant. And I think that Cleveland has decided that that's significant. So these two narratives that are convening is, one, on one hand, we have this team, the Warriors, that won 73 wins. They, you know, whether you believe in their greatness or not, which I personally do believe in, you have to admit that they sort of had a cakewalk to their championship last year and didn't really get the same type of proving grounds that is sufficient. They didn't really get the same degree of proving, of stressing, as they didn't really get brought to their furthest limits. You know, they went down in a series against the Memphis Grizzlies, you know? Like, that's not gonna cut it if you're gonna say that this is one of the best teams ever. However, this season, I mean, especially after coming back against OKC, their narrative could be completed by having perhaps their most important player suspended for Game 5. And then in Game 6, their starting center gets injured. And then in Game 7, their finals MVP last year is screwed up, has significant back issues, and despite all of that, they beat LeBron James, who is really the embodiment of greatness in the NBA over the last decade or more. So that's this one narrative that's headed at a crash course with this other one, which is, you know, really much less clean. It's gritty. It's Cleveland. It's success and failure. It's 6 trips to the finals, but 2 victories. And that narrative is the story of redemption, where LeBron James left to go to Miami, to go to South Beach, to go to a better situation in a funner city with 85 degrees, even on a cloudy day, the beach, the women, the parties, all of that, to play alongside 2 superstars and just, you know, he took the easy way out, I suppose you could say. And yeah, returning to Cleveland was no doubt, you know, would LeBron have returned to Cleveland if Miami had three-peated? Probably not. Would he have returned to Cleveland if he couldn't have gotten Kevin Love, who, ironically enough, doesn't mean anything? Would he have gone back to Cleveland if Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving and Tristan Thompson and this core of talented young players had been there? Probably not. But it still wasn't easy to go back and create a team from scratch, rebuild, essentially, the next great LeBron team, which is what he did. And the situation that LeBron finds himself in is really an interesting one, because for a lot of people it's been surprising that LeBron has been able to do this without Kevin Love. But, you know, thinking back to that 66-win Cavaliers season, when the starters were Daniel Gibson, Delonte West, LeBron, and then Ben Wallace and Ilgauskas, it was a really bad, just bad lineup. Like, straight up, it was not good. Off the bench, you know, Donyell Marshall and some flotsam, some NBA flotsam, and he brought that to 66 wins. The Cleveland teams that LeBron was on before he went to Miami, it's like, oh, you know, for LeBron to be successful, he needs Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. You know, LeBron has carried some awful teams to the finals, and that's just a reality. Last year, he brought the Cavaliers to 6 wins. His starting lineup was Timofey Mozgov and a minimum contract Matthew Dellavedova, who, by the way, hasn't seen any playing time in these finals. He hardly had any NBA-quality players.
So,
LeBron finds himself relegated, you know, I think 5th or something in MVP voting this year. And people have really started to question whether or not he was the best in the NBA. And, I mean, I was among them. And because of my nature, because of the thought and the rationality with which I try to analyze all of these different things, I'm not willing to say, okay, well, this is it. You know, if LeBron wins this series, he's better than Steph Curry. But, like, damn, that's compelling, you know? In fact, it's compelling even if he loses tonight. It's compelling to me that LeBron James might be the better player regardless of what happens. I mean, if Steph comes and hits, like, 15 threes and scores 60 points and carries the Warriors to victory, then that's one thing, right? But even if Steph scores 30, but LeBron scores 40, 15, and 15, as far as rebounds and assists, it's hard to be an NBA fan and watch what we've watched over the course of the series and not say, yeah, like, shit, this is LeBron James. And over the last decade, we've watched him do amazing things like this and get to the finals 6 times in a row and get there like 10 times. I think we take for granted how easy apparently it is to do that when it's just not easy at all. So we have LeBron, who is clearly in his prime, but probably on the outside edge of his prime. It'll be interesting to see what happens, because he physically is so much different than most athletes we've seen come into the NBA. His career and injury trajectory looks more like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's than anyone else's. So maybe he'll be effective until he's 40 and then play until he's 42. It's hard to say, but, you know, he's dealing with these upstart whippersnappers, the Warriors, you know, with the new best player in the league, apparently, this 160-pound Steph Curry guy, who sells more shoes than he does, although I don't think that's true, who, I don't know, is more exciting and dynamic and gets more press and media coverage and is apparently the new successor, but LeBron's not ready to give away that torch. And nor should he. Not when he can play the way that he's played in this finals, which might be, you know, let's face it, the best finals performance of all time. When I thought last year might have been the best finals performance of all time, he was transcendent. LeBron is incredible. And I was talking the other day and I made the point, Steve Kerr came off the bench and won a couple of championships with the Chicago Bulls. But if Steve Kerr had been on a different team, he might have been an all-star. Meanwhile, LeBron has been surrounded by sort of, like, you know, crap, right? It's hard, even as someone who's seen Michael Jordan and LeBron James, it's hard to argue that LeBron James isn't the most complete, full, perfect basketball player that there's ever been, because I think he was given the choice to take over, and he sort of has, although to his credit, he's kept Kyrie involved, but it's like he's found this incredibly thin tightrope to walk where he's facilitated for his whole team, including Kyrie Irving, but also dominated the game in the way that his detractors, the people who are like, you'll never be like Kobe, you'll never be like MJ, you need to score a billion points, he's done that, and he stayed true to himself, which is the most dominant player that we've seen, perhaps ever. The most complete player that we've seen, perhaps ever. So, you really have this greasers and then preps, which I think is the two sides in the outsiders. Greasers and preps, I don't know. Or in Dodgeball, you have the Globo Gym Vipers and then the regular Joes, which I think the regular Joes, I think they actually have Cleveland's colors, which is great. You have sort of Nitty Gritty America, you know, sort of like that NRA commercial recently with Charlie Daniels. To the Ayatollahs of Iran. Is it? No, you haven't met the real America, and you better pray you never do. So yeah, you have Charlie Daniels on one side, and then you have the sleek, rich boy, light-skinned, pretty boy, GQ magazine, sexy playing Steph and Clay, sons of NBA players, right? They grew up wealthy, with all the tools to be the best that they could. LeBron James didn't have a father, on the other hand, right? Kyrie Irving, I don't actually honestly know what his background is, but just on a very superficial level, you see the connection there. Kyrie Irving, honestly, may have been a billionaire, but that's not our perception of it. And, like, part of that is just 100% superficial, 100%, like, racially imposed, or, you know, biracially imposed to the other extent. I told an anecdote about Steph on our Steph Curry podcast during the season. It was after the OKC three that he hit from, like, 37 feet. And Steph was singing rap lyrics like, you know, they were just sort of chilling out, sort of like the Beach Boys, having a good time in the locker room, joking around. And they were rapping, and the N-word came up as a lyric, and Steph didn't say anything. And it was sort of like a record scratch, and he was silent for a little bit, and he was like, wait, can I even say that? And everyone had a big laugh out of it. But that actually points to something interesting about Steph Curry, which is, you know, I mean, it's like, I mean, he's not white America, but, like, he's as vanilla, non-threatening as it gets, and as posh, and, I mean, he's preppy. He's prep school. It's the understanding that we have of him as a player and as a person, especially with his wife, whose Twitter is rigged, by the way. And, you know, they have their perfect life with their polo shirts and croquet sticks, bright green golf courses and gated communities. And they're the 1%, right? And Cleveland's the 99%. So I want to finish watching greatness. I want the Warriors to win tonight. But I don't know if LeBron James is ever going to make it to a Game 7 finals again. He'll probably make it back to multiple finals. I don't know if he'll ever be this close. And it's more important to me for LeBron to win a championship than it is for the Warriors to get 73 wins. I want to have both, right? I want the Warriors to win. I want the Warriors to finish their historic run, and then next year, when the Warriors get like 68 wins, I want LeBron to come and step on their throats. But you can't always have both. And that's sort of the bottom line. If you ask, I listened to the press conferences with Clay and Steph and Steve Kerr, and questions asked from the Warriors media, and they've expressed that it's like, you know, we either we're the best ever and we win tonight, or we're not and we don't win tonight. And so we're flipping this coin. I mean, that's my prophecy, because the whole motif, the whole joke is that I prophesize based on analytics and numbers, and that doesn't matter anymore. That's not what this is about. And there's some X's and O's stuff I could talk about. I could briefly mention that, you know, maybe they try to hide Steph Curry on Kevin Love. But, like, I don't want to get into it. I don't want to get into some of the other stuff, because, like, it just doesn't matter anymore. This is a coin flip. And with that, heads, Cavaliers win. LeBron wins one for the land. Tails, 73-win Warriors are the best ever. Tails, Warriors win. So, thanks for listening to Almighty Ballin', the Almighty Podcast. I'm the prof, signing off. Embrace the moment, guys. You know, everyone wants Steph to go out there and be clutch and recognize and understand the stage that he's on, and LeBron to do the same like he's been doing. But, you know, we need to do the same too. Like, you could DVR Game of Thrones or find it on the internet later. Tonight, we're watching a game that it's definitely the most important game that I've ever watched. But it might be the most important game in NBA history. So be in the moment. Live in the moment. Enjoy it. Thanks for listening. We'll continue our season previews here, going into the future. Check out Fan Essentials and SeatGeek. But I can plug all that stuff later, because tonight is about basketball. And that's all it's about. I don't have any breakdowns or any other opinions to give you.